Here we are.
It's Thursday, 7 p.m., and time for another edition of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
Call our guest line at any time during the show and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
HaberHill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa. The philosophy for my brand, Rainborn, is to only use dry farm vineyards, hence the name Rainborn.
The best way to reach us here at Ten Spoon in Montana is to go to www.tenspoon.com.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
Candia Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Call now and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Glacier Park in Montana.
Damas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry.
Come and visit Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
This is Dr. Tom Cottrell. He is with the University of Kentucky Extension in Lexington, Kentucky. He's an enologist there.
I learned winemaking from the then 39 wineries in Napa Valley.
All right. We have Jason with us tonight.
Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Mike, from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Not only am I an attorney, that a good part of my practice focuses on wine regulations and litigation, but I also am the president of a vineyard up here. I started the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country.
Again, the website is greenbelt.com. Our phone number is 401-847-3777.
Info at hummingbirdridgewinery.com. My dad always said I'm a jack of all trades. He said that, you know, just a little guy.
Anyone out there who is interested in this software, you really need to go check out this site. It's www.uncork.biz.
That's really what we're about, and that's, as you said, uncork.biz is where our main site is, and that's where people can read lots about it.
Info at vineyard@hershey.com.
Well, I grew up on the farm here in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
We have a website, Waltz, vineyard with an S, don't forget the S, .com.
Paul is a blogger.
It's blog.penlive. P as in Paul, ENNLIVE.com/wine, and that should get you to my wine classroom.
It's wineflower.com, all one word, wineflower.
It's all about wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Oh, yeah.
Woo-hoo.
Thank you, Rusty.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Wow, I tell you, they got to stay warm and dry out there, man.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah. Not this weekend. This weekend we are going to be
winter.
Close to, what, 30s, I guess, 40s?
Yeah, they're saying yeah, in the upper 30s. Yeah, we're getting our 3 days of winter.
Yeah.
Florida winter.
What a great time to have it. And we had a little bit of rain yesterday, today, and maybe some more tonight and tomorrow. But then it's typical when a cold front comes through. But you join us on a special day. It is February 14th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Well, just after 7 p.m. That's a long intro.
And it is, yeah.
I need to come up with a way to shorten that down to 40 seconds or something. I don't know, but I'll do something.
You'll never do it.
that's just the number of guests that we've had on. It's amazing, and you know that it's grown from that, because you know, like Ron and I always talk that, you know, when we first started, it was almost like the two of us were just talking. Now we're up in the thousands, and you know, it's just it's amazing.
It's amazing.
And the guests, you know, that take the time out of their schedules to be on the show, that is a good portion of them that have appeared on the show for the last year and a half, I guess it's been. So
yeah.
That we started up with the U.S. and even in Australia, we had the Uncork.biz come on here with telling us about his software and everything he can do, and so he was in there and it's fantastic, and it continues, except for tonight.
Except for tonight. We've got lots of stuff for you, though. Yeah.
Yes. I just want to let everybody know that anyone in the area between now and, we'll make it soon, but between now and definitely before April the 2nd, Florida State's winery, anyone who shows up with a spring training baseball ticket stub will get a free tasting, which is a good value, very good value, and also 10% off of any wine purchase. It's a great offer, and we have a lot of baseball down here. And we have a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
Where they come from? They come out just to do that. We have a lot of baseball spring training camps around in this area. You can easily, pick a day. See a game or so, bring a ticket stub, and have a great deal over at the Florida State's Winery, and we'll give you the address and location and everything coming up in the show. So stay tuned for that. But there is a lot of information, so I need to back out of here and put my listening ears on and take it away, Ron. This is great.
You can jump in anytime you have any questions. Thank Mike. You're just as much of this as we are on this. So yeah. Before you put your listening ears on, I was thinking of something during the opening there. For all of you out there who like to listen to Mike every once in a while instead of just me, Mike does host some radio programs. A couple, three nights a week, he is on the computer on radio programs. And so, Mike, tell a little bit about that so people can tune in on that so you can get yourself some more listeners there.
Oh, boy. Out of the many that are on here listening to us. Well, it's not talk. It's music based. So if you like to listen to online radio stations, I do participate in that as well. With there's a couple of stations out there that I'm on. I do either classic rock or country or sometimes hits, that kind of thing. It just varies and it differs week to week. But you want to get information on that? Thank you very much. My Facebook page is facebook.com/ Radio DJ Mike. That's all one word, no spaces or dashes. And wow, that's pretty cool. So there's going to be a lot of people going, oh, okay. Yeah, go to Facebook.
It is. It's a good program. I've tuned in on some of the shows, and you know, he'll play requests. He'll jump in and take care of just about anything you want. He's also, you can chat with him while you're on the program and through IM and all that. So it's cool. And, cool. You know, he plays a lot of good stuff and everything. And so if you're into country, great program to tune into. He'll play just about anything that you want to listen to. If you're into classic rock, he's got a great library of that. So you can.
Yeah, tune in sometime. Thank you.
Tune in, yeah. Well, yeah, it's a good program. Talk about that a little bit. A whole bunch of stuff to talk about tonight. Just a whole bunch of information here. Thanks. That I've accumulated over the weeks, and I want to share it with you. One of the things I want to start out with here is the real estate section. We always enjoy the real estate section. I don't know if anybody has bought any of these properties yet through our advice, but hey, if you haven't, that's okay too. And if you have, wonderful, great, give us a call. We'll get you on the program because they're winery properties. Again, as always, if you want more information, give us a call or email us or go onto the website or Facebook or any of those. Get in touch with us. We will give you more information, more contact information for these properties. Winery for sale. Here you go. A licensed and bonded winery in Redding, California. Shasta Company has all the permits ready for your wine products to be sold. So it's all set turnkey, it sounds like. So if you want to know more information, let me know. Winery space available, bonded winery space available. Y'all keep hearing me say bonded. That is the key to wineries. Every one of them has to be bonded. You have to have your federal bonds and or your state bonds. So if you're going to open up a winery, be sure you get those. Beckman Winery Vineyard and Home is for sale. Country home on a 7-plus idyllic acres. Beckman Estate Vineyard. 5 acres of Syrah, Zinfandel, and Cinsault. Winery building and garage equipment storage building reduced to $429,000. Wow, that is a good price. Kincaid Ridge Vineyard and Winery. Now, this is where we've been talking about Napa Valley for all these times and up in California. Well, Kincaid Ridge Vineyard and Winery is only 1 hour from Cincinnati in beautiful Brown County, Ohio. It's a historic viticulture area made famous by Nicholas Longworth, the father of American wine, which is interesting because I don't think we've talked about Nicholas Longworth. 126 acres at a 900-foot elevation, 5 acres of vinifera vineyard planted in 1999 and 2001, ungulated limestone soil, not unlike St. Emilion. A farmhouse built in 1880, remodeled kitchen and bathroom, new furnace, new roof, and more. 2 large barns on the property. Winery is located 3 miles from the vineyard, outside downtown Ripley, a historic river town. All vineyard equipment and winery equipment included. You can see it at KincaidRidge.com/forsale.htm.
That's interesting. They were a guest on our show in 2011.
Kincaid Ridge was? I thought the name sounded familiar.
When you said that, I go, are you kidding? Really?
Yeah.
I looked it up and I go, wow, they were in 2011 on the program.
Oh, wow. Well, they're selling everything, lock, stock, and barrel. Wow. $850,000 turnkey operation.
Wow.
Well, that's interesting. I was starting to read it, and I'm thinking Kincaid Ridge, and I thought, that is interesting.
Yeah, I looked it up. Okay.
Oh, well, there it is. It's and I'm sure they would be more than willing to help you all get started if anyone wants to get started on it and keep going on that and all that. But sounds like a pretty good deal, $150,000 turnkey operation. It also says owner's flexible. It sounds like they're selling it themselves with all the information here. So, and we want to lease your vineyard. We are looking for vineyards to lease around the Napa Valley and in the Russian River Valley. We have had great success working with vineyard owners in the past. We would like to add a few more vineyards to our program this year. We work with Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Petit Verdot, and Cabernet Franc. We have a number of ways to work with leases, and we are always open to new ideas on how to structure this type of agreement if you're at all interested. And they have a phone number and an email address. If you have a vineyard in that area, we can get you in contact with them. Still in California, Ukiah area vineyard, Redwood Valley, Weimark Vineyard is located at 10200 West Road in Redwood Valley, California. It consists of 200 total acres, of which 126 are planted to red and white varieties, approximately half and half. The vineyard has been a consistent 525 to 550 ton producer and is professionally farmed. There are 3 reservoirs, 2 homes, and a hillside building parcel with significant views. The property is located a short distance from Highway 101 on a paved county road, priced to sell at $3,350,000. Opportunity on Red Mountain, 20 acres with irrigation water located on Red Mountain, Washington State's premier wine growing area. Property has a breathtaking panoramic view of the Yakima Valley and river and is well situated for a winery surrounded by vineyard. And I've got the information for that if you're interested. And couple more here. Knights Valley Home and Vineyard. 12.2 total acres with 4.5 acres planted to mainly Cabernet Sauvignon, which is sold to Behringer. Nicely designated three-bedroom, two-bath home with great views of Mount St. Helena. An underground wine cellar, large farm shop, and a rental add to the charm of this rural property. Calistoga address, but located in Sonoma County. Asking price, $1.5 million. 30-acre vineyard on River Road. 35 acres with 30 acres planted to Chardonnay in the Russian River AVA, plus a 1,500 square foot, three-bedroom, two-bath farmhouse and barn. Great location. For more information, get a hold of me. I'll contact you to the people. And then one last one here, Coastal Estate Parcel, 255 plus or minus acres, a beautiful land with ocean view near Timber Cove. Improved dirt roads wind through meadows, ponds, and timberland. Numerous building sites and ample water. Adjacent 58 plus or minus acre vineyard parcel also available. Make an offer we can't refuse on both or both properties. Right now, $705,000. That is our real estate section for today, or for this week, or this month, or until I do it again. If you want any information, more information on any of those real estate properties, then get a hold of us on Facebook or on our website or through email or any of the other ways that you can contact us. We'll give you all that information later. Got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Now, I've been checking out. I follow a lot of blog sites, and I enjoy them. They have a lot of information on there and different things like this. One of my favorites, I have to admit, is Joy's Joy of Wine. She does a great job. She keeps it simple, concise. She doesn't go into a whole bunch of stuff. And she's got a couple of them out that she wrote right now that I found interesting. One of them, Valentine's Day, since today is Valentine's Day. Hope everyone is having a great one. And those of you who are single and don't have a significant other, I'm sure there are lots of people out there who care about you, so you know, don't despair. Just because you don't have someone with you right now doesn't mean that, hey, you can't drown your sorrows in a nice Cabernet. Valentine's Day is here, and a lot of times Valentine's Day is associated with hearts and cupids and all that stuff. And so Joy's Joy of Wine actually went on a search to try to find wines that had hearts on the label or associated with it somehow. And so she said, wine is also associated with hearts in many ways. Wine is said to be good for the heart. It protects the heart, gladdens the heart, and comes from the heart. So on Valentine's Day, what could be more appropriate than a wine with a heart on the label? And she found a few here. Caillon Cigar, I believe it's pronounced that way. A nice French wine located in the Bordeaux region of France has a heart right smack dab in the middle of the label. That is its symbol. It is, they put out, you know, the standard Bordeaux wines in, from that region. The estate can be traced back as far as 1147, and at the time it was owned by Monsignor de Calonne. He later owned the estate and is quoted as saying, I make my wine at Lafitte and Latour, but my heart is in Calonne. So, it's a quote that's brought about a lot of comments in that region and everything. So they do have a big heart, French wine, a big heart right in the middle of the wine. Wine is said to be high in tannins, well-structured, with traditional textures. A bottle sells for $100 to $120 here in the United States, which for a Bordeaux, that really isn't too bad for a good Bordeaux, and it's not too bad. It's similar to our Meritage here in the United States in the stalls and everything. Heart and Hands Winery is located near Cuyahoga Lake in New York. It's owned by Tom and Susan Higgins. The winery opened in 2008, and it makes basically Pinot Noir and Rieslings. Heart and Hand label features a ring, a traditional Irish wedding ring, which dates back to the 17th century. And it shows the hands of the ring holding a heart in the middle of it. A traditional ring, loyalty, fidelity, the crown on it signifies loyalty and fidelity. It's pretty cool labor. The wines are crafted from recent Pinot Noir grapes grown by several Finger Lakes vineyards, including one on the estate. Small production, about 1,500 cases a year. The wine has some unique characteristics. They sell for anywhere from $18 to $50 a bottle. You can go to www.heartandhandswine, all one line, .com. Heart and Hands with an S, wine.com. And see the labels and pick up a wine. Heart of Gold is a popular name for a wine in New Zealand. Spade Oak Vineyard has a line of wines by the name Heart of Gold, Syrah Tempranillo blend. They have a Heart of Gold St. Laurent, a Heart of Gold Chardonnay Vinois, a Heart of Gold Gruner Wurtlener, but they do not feature heart on the label. So they just, in the name, it is not in on the label. There's a winery in Mergem Manor, located in Appleton, New York, and it has a heart on the label, gold heart on the label. They have over 30 wines, including a lot of fruit wines, one that is called Heart of Gold, made with apricots, and it has apricot aroma and rich buttery taste. It sells for $19. Check that out at www.margimmanor.com, M-A-R-J-I-M, Manor, M-A-N-O-R.com, margimmanor.com. And we also have some wine labels that are actually shaped like a heart. Torres Winery. It is located in Spain. The wine label was created by Miguel Torres Carbo as a gift to his wife on Valentine's Day, and they have a heart on the label, a big heart. You can find those at www.torres.es. Again, it's in Spain, so not, T-O-R-R-E-S-E-S, Torres-E-S. And Terra Valentine Winery is located near St. Helena, California, on Spring Mountain. In fact, we just read a property for sale up there. The name of the winery is in honor of the owner, Angus Wortelli's father, Valentine Wortelli. And it's a two-story stone winery. It offers about a dozen different wines. Amore wine is a blend of 90%, which is one of their signature ones. So it's Valentine Winery and Amore wine, 90% Sangiovese, 5% Merlot, and 5% Cabernet. The wine has a spice note, strawberries, blueberries, and crab apple flavors to it. It sells for $40 a bottle. And Marriage is another one they make. It's a Bordeaux blend with Cabernet Franc and Merlot. It sells for $80 a bottle. Valentine Winery, if you'd like to know more about them or find out, check them out at www.terravalentine, T-E-R-R-A, Valentine, V-A-L-E-N-T-I-N-E.com. So, our Valentine wines, our wines with a heart on it. Something else that Joy wrote about here, which I found interesting, because we've talked about oak. I always ask the wineries that we talk to if they oak or stainless steel or if they are plastic. A lot of them do use oak. She had a thing here. Oak barrels versus oak alternatives. Is there a difference? We've talked to a lot of people on the program, and a lot of them have. Well, in fact, the gentleman we talked to, and I can look up the notes here and find out, but the man in Missouri that has the winery up there and said that he was using oak and decided to use oak chips, and so he took the oak chips and put it into his oak, and he let it set there for as long as he would if he let it set in an oak barrel, and it just got so over-oaked, he had to blend it down three or four different times to get it back down to where he wanted it, because the oak chips just imparted so much more oak into his wine. We've talked to a lot of other people who said that they don't use oak barrels because of the cost, and they use different types, alternatives, if you will. The oak chips, oak logs, oak dust, oak powders, oak staves. There's any way you can get oak in contact with the wine is what you're trying to do to impart the oak flavors. And then, of course, different oaks will give you different flavors. The French oak is the classic, which gives you the vanilla. But overall, oaks will soften, will change the flavors, will smooth out a wine a lot of times. If a wine's real, real heavily oaked, it can really cover up a lot of stuff in it. That's bad and also good. You know, you need to be careful with that, too. Over-oaking a wine can also cover up some of the flavors that you want to bring out in the wine. So this debate here, this article, was about oak versus the oak barrels versus the oak alternatives. Is there a difference? Basically there is. If it depends on how long you're aging and all that. But the question was, is there a difference in the final product given all factors being the same? And she says there's something wonderful about the smoky, toasted notes in a well-aged oaky Cabernet are those warm vanilla flavors and that velvety oak Chardonnay. And that's smokiness and toasty notes is what oak is going to give a wine. Velvety vanilla, again, white wines would do that. But oak flavors express richness to our taste buds while imparting smoothness to the drink. But oak-aged wines are not cheap. By any means, they are not cheap. And this is always a problem. When you start using oak, you're putting money into that bottle. And, hey, let's face it, the consumer's going to end up paying for it. So, the question is, oak aging a wine from can be expensive proposition. First, there's the cost of the oak barrels, anywhere from $900 on up for a French oak barrel. And they can only be used two or three times, maybe three, four times. I mean, if you're lucky, you can squeeze it out. Plus, you got the upkeep of the barrel. You got the storage of the barrel. Now, these are factors that most people don't keep in consideration, too. But when you're talking about oak aging and oak stuff, you got to have some place to set those. One barrel will hold 59 gallons, and 59 gallons is approximately 25 cases. So if your production is 1,000 cases, then do the math. You're going to have a lot of oak barrels sitting around. You're going to have the place to put those. And if you're aging those for 6 years, 5 years, whatever, it is going to get very expensive with no return on your cost. So then the cost is passed on to the consumer, who then purchases this wonderful wine, nice and oak, and he's saying, boy, I'm paying a lot of money for this, but he wants that rich oakiness, and you can't lower the prices to fall into that $7 to $15 range because you've got too much money into it. So they are using the alternatives. Now, the alternatives have been around for a long time. Oak barrel usage became widespread during the Roman Empire as a way to protect wine while in storage. In the 1500s, European winemakers discovered that those wooden barrels not only provided great storage and transportation, but certain woods gave wines a better flavor and a softer flavor. By the 1700s, the French had discovered that of all the types of oak, it was the white oak barrels that imparted the best flavor to a wine during aging. So white oak barrels have continued to be the mainstay for the French for over 200 years now. And oak barrels offer the tightest grain wood, so that is one of the reasons oak is used, allowing for the least amount of wine to be lost due to evaporation. So, this is why oak is used. Other barrels have been tested, and other barrels are used periodically. Don't get me wrong. There are other types of barrels out there, but oak is the flavors that we've all gotten used to. I suppose you can, use mahogany or any number of other types, but oak has become the one. The charring, the toast levels, is the charring inside. All of these the how the cooperage crafted the barrel, what was put into making it, how the wood was dried. All of these things are going into it, which can affect the wine's flavor, appearance, aromas, and cost. Robert Mondavi has been credited with the different types of oak to achieve different flavors during his research in the 60s and 70s. American oak barrels impart more intense flavors and are perfect for big, bold reds. Now, you know, something to think about there. Toast levels will also affect the wine. A light toast may impart a coconut or vanilla flavor, while a darker toast can bring out more of a caramel or smoky taste. And again, these are all important in selecting it. When they toast it, I get samples of oak, toasted oak, and it shows the levels of toast on it. And it's amazing. You can, you know, choose your ones on that. And that includes not just the barrels, but also the chips, the logs, everything. And so all of these come into play. A commercial winery making 5,000 gallons of wine a year can easily spend over $130,000 for barrels. It makes no difference what size or anything. And, you know, it's each barrel may last just a few times before the flavors are no longer noticeable and they have to purchase new barrels or new cooperage. They have came up with alternatives at a minimum price. Alternatives must be considered. Because it is expensive. Alcohol spirit makers have been bourbon, whiskey, rye, rum, and all that have already done experimentation that led to the development of oak chips, oak powder, and oak staves. These oak barrel alternatives could be added to the spirit aging in a stainless steel tank, and those beloved oaky flavors would still evolve. Winemakers said, wow, what a way to go. This is cheaper and better. Although wine barrel purists were not impressed. Their initial outcry brought a dismal press reviews and all sorts of bad press to using other things besides just straight barrels. When we started to admit using oak chips and oak dust and oak staves, it ruined the reputation. Some wineries had to go back, even though it cost them more. In 1993, after micro oxygenation methods were developed, and this method actually imitates the process that occurs in wines aged in oak barrels, that the use of oak chips in wine was finally legalized in the United States. 1993, that recent, that's only 10 years ago, or 20 years ago that they, 10, wow, 20 years ago that they legalized oak alternatives in wine, if it was going to be oaked. In Europe, it was illegal using these alternatives years before they were allowed to by law. So that doesn't mean that you couldn't get one before then, that just means that they didn't tell you. Old beliefs die hard, though. Even if you ask winemakers in key winemaking areas, New York, California, Washington, about their mass-produced wines, almost everyone will tell you that oak chips are involved, but most will not want you to advertise that because it's viewed as poor quality than oak barrels. It's just the mindset that a lot of people have. I teach a class every month, and I always tell people about the alternatives and all that, and, you know, you can't tell the difference. You really can't. There are advantages to using oak alternatives instead of barrels. Without question, there are advantages. Oak chips have a better environmental impact. An oak tree can produce only a few barrels, whereas alternatives from one tree can be used to craft hundreds, if not thousands, of bottles of wine, depending on how you're using it, what you're using. Oak chips are considered one of the cleanest ways to get those oaky flavors into wine. Simply put the correct amount of chips in a nylon or mesh bag and place in the tank. When the period of time has elapsed and the desired oakiness flavor has arrived, the bag is removed and no residue is left behind. It's a clearer, brighter wine, more stable color, easier to bottle, easier to filter. all sorts of goodies from doing that. Oak also imparts subtle flavors to the wine. When using oak chips, a winemaker can experiment using different levels. They don't have to go out and buy this $1,000 barrel and experiment with it that way. He can do it simply with oak chips. They're inexpensive. Barrels are expensive. I mean, let's face it. It's labor-intensive to make barrels. You can put a tree branch into a chipper and you have your oak chips. I mean, it's almost that simple. The oak chips are a great way to help a winemaker deliver a high quality at a good price. Actually, oak chips can speed up the process too. Like I just mentioned about the guy from Missouri, he said that he found out that, you know, it just a little bit went a long way. So it really helped the color and the aroma and the style of wine by what he was doing. So basically, in the end, you know, it's oak barrels are here to stay, and oak barrels have tradition of seeing the oak barrels in a winery. Everyone loves to see the oak barrels lined up in a winery cellar. Everyone likes to see the oak barrels all in it. Where's your oak? Well, there, and you got stacks of oak barrels there, and it's really pretty and it's really nice, and everybody loves it. And it's, you know, where are your oak barrels? Oh, there they are. And I mean, this is, it's got this aura about it that the oak barrels. But, you know, let's face it. If the people knew that how much it was costing them just to see those oak barrels, most everybody would say, hey, why aren't you using oak chips, oak dust, oak logs, any other alternative? Because I tell you, it's going to give you the same results, and it's not going to be as expensive when that bottle of wine gets to the store and you're laying down your cash for it. And that's really if it tastes the same. And I honestly have to say, I don't think it's going to change the taste. It is going to taste the same. So that's, you know, a little bit about oak barrels there and the alternative. We missed something a couple of weeks ago. On January the 16th, 93 years ago, on January the 16th, Prohibition became a law in the United States. And it changed country. 18th Amendment of the United States was added, and it went into effect 1 year later, on January 16th, 1919. On January 16th, 1920, it went into effect. And it was kicked around for 2 or 3 years before it actually was passed. The Senate worked on the House, religious groups, anti-saloon league, the 36 states before Prohibition was acted, all looked at it and you know, debated and everything. President Herbert Hoover called Prohibition the noble experiment because some felt it was a way to attempt to keep families together. You know, if you don't have liquor stores, you can do away with alcohol abuse. Prohibition was considered an experiment because those in the larger cities saw nothing wrong with drinking in moderation. But Prohibition called for a nationwide ban on the manufacturing, transportation, and sale of alcohol. This included wine, beer, and spirits. Any alcohol over 0.5% by volume. Now, it wasn't all alcohol, over 0.5%. And so it did not outlaw the possession or consumption of alcohol. We have to remember that. It only banned the manufacturing, transportation, and sale. So you can still possess it and still consume it. How you got it, that's a different thing. But the Volstead Act was enacted in order to achieve this. Okay, but there were a lot of loopholes in the law. One of the loopholes, which you might not know about, is the omission allowed pharmacists to legally dispense alcohol by prescriptions. All right, it didn't take the criminal element long to figure out that owning a pharmacy was the perfect facade to bootleg liquor. So if you were a pharmacist, you can actually prescribe alcohol, and that gave it legitimacy, and then you can still own it and drink it, which was not against the law. Another loophole allowed wine to be obtained and used for religious purposes. So So self-ordained ministers and rabbis suddenly appeared to purchase wine for their congregations across the country. And there was lots of self-ordained ministers and rabbis popping up at that time. We all know of the wineries that survived because they were making the religious wine, sacramental wine. If it weren't for the sacramental wine, a lot of these wineries never survived. That, you know, and Brotherhood Winery, one of the best known ones. In fact, we interviewed him, and they talked about that. That's how they survived Prohibition, because of sacramental wine. Prohibition was brought about to curb excessive drinking and loose morals, while saying to increase economic effects that would result. Some predicted that this Nobel experiment would not go well. Well, we know it didn't. The ban on alcohol had been tried before on smaller scales. In 1844, Massachusetts town made it illegal. That led one tavern owner to then charge admission to customers to see a striped pig in his saloon. Once inside, drinks were provided for free. Always a way to get around it. The state of Maine became the first state to ban the sale of alcohol in 1851. The state's Irish population and those of the working class revolted. By 1855, opinions had seethed until a deadly riot broke out in Portland. The law was repealed. And prohibition, the proponents of prohibition were sure that self-alcohol would, once it was banned, people would become more moral and family-oriented. Health issues were expected to improve, and supporters believed that the economy would get better because workers would be more productive and men wouldn't be going out spending their money on drink. They would be going home to their families, and so therefore crime would drop and everything would be so much better. Again, we all know how that went. Instead of bringing about these conditions, prohibition was a fiasco. Loss of billions of dollars in taxes, which was one of the big things. The government didn't consider that. Thousands of people who had worked in the alcohol industry immediately lost their jobs when distilleries, wineries, breweries, and saloons closed down, and restaurants began to fail because they could no longer profit from the sale of alcohol. They had to sell their food, and they didn't have that extra money coming in from alcohol. Prohibition, they figured, cost the federal government $11 billion in lost revenue from excise taxes on alcohol sales. States that relied on excise liquor taxes to fund them suddenly and completely lost that income. A good example, the state of New York derived almost 75% of their budget from those taxes, and it was gone overnight. They didn't think about this stuff. They didn't look at this stuff. They were, you know, we want this country more moral. With an eye toward getting more money in the coffers quickly, income taxes were enacted and became the new way to fund the state and federal budgets. And interestingly, they were never done away with after prohibition was repealed. So we can blame prohibition for our state and federal income tax to try to get the money that was lost on that. It appears that no one took into account the cost to enforce prohibition also, which grew to over $300 million. Millions of Americans became criminals because of prohibition. Moonshiners cropped up all over the place. Distilleries, corn mash, hooch, bootleggers smuggled wine and alcohol all over the place. There was many people made their own wine. I don't think a week goes by without people coming in saying, my grandfather used to make wine during Prohibition, you know, and stuff like this. And there was, for many people, attempted to make their own wine at home by following the warning labels attached to jugs of concentrated grape juice. These labels describe what not to do to cause the juice to ferment and become wine. You know, don't do this or this will become wine. And so people go, ooh, it became a guide. Organized crime was thriving in major cities all over the place because of it. And the passing of the 18th Amendment, alcohol sales just went underground. Speakeasies, as they were called, cropped up all over the place. Gangsters operated in illegal clubs, became very popular. You knew the password of the secret knock and you could get in and drink. Once you get inside, it was okay to drink it, but you know, it was illegal to get it there and all that other stuff. So they confiscated. We all have seen the TV show Elliot Ness and breaking the booze and all that, pouring it down. New York alone, there was reports between 30,000 to 100,000 speakeasies in business in 1925, with only 1,500 federal prohibition agents to enforce the new law. The vice ran rampant in this country. Prohibition brought about health issues, too, because of the unregulated alcohol and the black market use. There was all sorts of stuff being put into the hooch, contaminated with acetone, antifreeze, different aldehydes. The coils on the steels were sometimes contaminated with lead and glycol. It was estimated that over 1,000 people died every year from impure and harmful alcohol. But in 1933, lawmakers were ready to admit that the noble experiment was wrong and had been anything but noble, for after 14 years, the 18th Amendment was abolished, making alcohol legal again. This is the first and only time, by the way, that the Constitution had repealed itself from an amendment, earlier amendment. So it was a fiasco, as we all know. And so it's, when you try to take away something, once you open the door, it's hard to close it. And that proved it in the alcohol in this country and all. So, but it was, like I said, we missed that anniversary back in January the 16th. 93 years ago, on January 16th, Prohibition went into effect, and then it was ingloriously repealed in 1933. So,
do you know what the actual date in 1933 was?
What the actual date it happened? No, I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't have it.
I'll look it up. That'll be the day we'll celebrate.
There you go. There you go. We'll make a note of that and we'll celebrate it. Yeah, there you go.
I'll look it up.
Prohibition is no more, but I don't know what the date is.
December 5th.
December 5th. Oh, we missed it. Oh, wow.
Wow, we missed both dates.
We missed both dates. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we'll make a note. Make a note. And
yep.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. December 5th, we will celebrate. That's right around the winery's birthday. That's cool. In fact, technically, December 5th was the winery's birthday. That's when we officially opened, December 5th, 2001.
Well, that's easy to remember then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. Myanmar. You know where Myanmar is? The country.
It's over there, isn't it? Yeah, okay.
It
that's
is.
My geography. Okay.
Yeah, it's over there. Burma, Myanmar. It used to be Burma, and then it became Myanmar. Myanmar is making wine. Excuse me. They are making wine. Myanmar has been ruled for decades by a junta rule, dictatorship or whatever you want to call it, and it's been off the map. People have ignored it. People have stayed away from it and all that. But it now has wineries. The first winery was opened in the Red Mountain, called the Red Mountain Estate in Shan, S-H-A-N, Shan State. I guess Myanmar is divided up into states. Shan State. And that's located in northeastern Myanmar. It is located at an elevation of, I had that here and I lost it now. At 3,600 feet, the vineyard is in Shan State. The vineyard produces approximately 120,000 bottles a year that fetch about 10,000 kayat apiece, which is about $11. It has become a big tourist draw. The country elected a president back in 19. The president Thein Sein took office in 2011, and he's overseeing a political reform throughout the country with the election of a democracy champion, Ang Kaiyai to the parliament and all sorts of stuff. And he's opened up the country to visitors. So foreigners have flooded in to the country of Myanmar. And one of the things that the foreigners are finding in the Myanmar is wine. And they're loving it. The Red Mountain Wine is owned by a Myanmar businessman who sells wine predominantly to the country's tourist hotspots, like Yangon, Mandalay, and the ancient temple complex of Bagan, or Bagan. There is another vineyard called Athaya Vineyard, and it's close to restaurants and stuff, and it's selling a lot of wine to the restaurant. Most of their wine in Myanmar are being sold within the country to restaurants and stuff. People like the local wines. Myanmar's winemakers have, by necessity, been very experimental in what they've been coming up and doing and all that. Been following in the footsteps of China, Thailand, India, and some Australia-based wines, but basically specializing in Asian wines. They have been able to grow because of the elevation of the vineyard at the Red Mountain Winery. They have been able to grow Tempranillo and the German wine Dornfelder, and they've also been able to put in some Sauvignon Blanc in the ground and some Pinot Noir. So they are doing quite well in it, and it's they're really starting to get some pretty decent reviews. I'm trying to see his credentials. A guy by the name of Gastine tested the Red Mountain wine, and he said he was pretty impressed. He was shocked about the Sauvignon Blanc and the Pinot Noir and thought it was very, very good. Swiss vineyard owner Serge Hamoz also visited and said that it was very interesting in a very good way. So they're putting out some wines in Myanmar. Maybe we can get somebody on the show one day. But Myanmar is becoming a wine producer in the country, or in the world. Burma, in that area where Burma used to be, now it's Myanmar. Let's see, I'll let you know here exactly where it is. Myanmar is located actually west of Vietnam, west of Cambodia, west of Laos, west of Thailand. And they border on Thailand and Laos and China to the east, and Bangladesh and, looks like basically Bangladesh to the west. No, there's a couple other countries here which I, Mizoram, I don't know. They are changing so often over in that part of the world that it's hard to really see. But Myanmar is becoming a wine producer now. It's so another wine to look out for on your store shelves. And let me back up here and get out of this and pull something else up here. Here's something I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to cover all this stuff. I had a lot of stuff to talk to you about, and I'm not going to cover it all. Free Flow Wines. You can check this out at freeflowwines.com if you're a restaurant or something. Free Flow Wines is a new system that's out there that you can have wine on tap. Wine on tap, just like beer, only it's wine. They have little kegs. They go to the wineries, and the wineries fill up the kegs instead of filling up bottles. It's not like the bottles on tap. You see those machines around all over the place. You can find them a lot of places, and in fact, you see them advertised in different stuff, different places where you put a certain bottle in there and you can get so much out of it and all that. But these are actually the little kegs, and they go to the wineries, and they work with the wineries, and the wineries fill up these kegs with their wines. And then they go to the restaurants. They actually plug it in just like a beer keg, and it, inert gas is pumped into it as the wine is pumped out, so there is no air on it. And wine in a bag, same principle, actually. Wine wine in a box. All the same principles. Long as air doesn't get to it, it's going to last longer. So therefore, you have the opportunity to have the wine there longer, which will help the restaurants. The reason you don't find a lot of wines in restaurants by the glass is because they're not ordered enough, and you order a glass of wine of something, they pour it for you, then that wine is not ordered again for another 2 or 3 weeks. It's bad, and they've lost money on it because of the cost, obviously. So this Free Flow Wines is the name of the company. They are offering wine through kegs and on tap. So you can check that out. Interesting little site. They show you a few videos there, show you how it's done, and show you installing one of them, and just information on it and all that good stuff. But it's something that you may be seeing, at your local pub or restaurant or something like that. More wine in kegs, wine on tap. Again, freeflowwines.com. Here's something else. Amazon. Amazon has an app now. Amazon is now starting to sell wine. Amazon is looking into doing big time selling wine. Amazon, the website, you all know what I'm talking about there. Amazon is doing this like they do everything else, jumping in with both feet. But they have done surveys, and they find that a good way to do this is to have reviews. People review the wine. So once you buy a wine, they ask you to review it. Go back online and tell what you think about it. Tell, you know, put in the information, the year, the wine, all that stuff, and tell what you think about it. That way, people can check out the reviews and help them find the wine that they want because based on the reviews. They're finding that when people go to stores, grocery stores, liquor stores, anything, they tend to get overwhelmed and they end up buying the same wine every single time because they don't want to experiment. They don't know anything else about them. They don't have anything, any reviews on the bottle. Obviously, they don't tell you too much. It's just, well, basically, we're restricted. There's just certain things we can do with wine labels. We're restricted by the government. We're restricted by space more than anything. And because of this, people start finding wines they like and they stay with them. They don't want to experiment, but they don't want to jump out. Amazon is approaching it in the fact that if you have reviews, if you have your peers out there reviewing this wine, and you go down and you find out of 50 reviews, 45 thumbs up, then you've got yourself a pretty good idea that that wine is going to maybe suit you. And so, therefore, you're more inclined to buy that wine. This is Amazon's approach. And they're basing this, they're backing this up with surveys, with things. Nielsen, the information company, has done surveys, has done different testing and found that consumers are more likely to buy wines based on reviews than any other way. 70% of global consumers surveyed online indicating that they trust the online platform. And that's increased from 15% just 4 years ago. So Amazon is getting into it. They're also finding that the confidence in wine, people don't know. There's so many new ones. There's so many different ones. So peer reviews have basically been the way that Amazon is approaching it. So look for this. It's going to be out there. It's going to start happening. Amazon will change the way wine is bought. They're going to start offering it online. I don't know how they're going to do it. We have talked over and over again about shipping laws, and we talked over and over again about how states are doing all this stuff. I guess if Amazon gets out there and starts selling wine, they're going to end up having to pay taxes, shipping costs and taxes. I don't know how this is going to work, but they're saying that with the reviews, they could sell a lot of wine. So it should be interesting what's going to happen in the future here with Amazon and buying and purchasing wines and stuff like that. Speaking of shipping costs, Montana is one of the states that you cannot ship to. They are the legislature in Montana is meeting tomorrow. They met today, tomorrow, and maybe Monday to decide if they're going to allow in-state shipping. If you are in Montana, contact your congressman. Contact your representative, your state congressman and state representatives. Tell them, yes, we want this. And it's not that it's going to do me any good. It's just the fact that every state should be allowed to ship into the states. But Montana is the one up right now. They are looking at allowing it, or a form of it. I don't know if they'll open up completely, but a form of it. Another thing I saw here, we have talked about organic. We have talked about biodynamic. There's this blogger out there, the Lower Valley Wine Tour, blogging wine tour, the wines and the regions and stuff like that. And UK Hostlin, UK Hostlin is the blogger's name. I can give you some information on him, but they've visited France annually for nearly 40 years. They were married in France. Their training in wine and viticulture resulted from the Lower Valley wine tours. They've guided people there and all that stuff. So they're big time French wine drinkers and all that. So, but their blog, which was just posted actually yesterday, or day before yesterday, on the 12th, the headline, organic is good, dynamic is better, ? And they were at a tasting, and they were talking about the wines they were tasting. And they were saying that, you know, that every time he had a chance to taste organic, he would. And he always thought that they were very fresh and they were very, you know, pleasing. And he said he was rarely disappointed when he compared the organic to the ones that were not advertised as organic. He said biodynamics, and I will quote his paragraph here, biodynamics has much in common with other organic approaches in that it emphasizes the use of manures and compost rather than artificial chemicals and pesticides on soil and plants. Methods unique to the biodynamic approach include an emphasis on integrating farm animals, the cultivation of crops, and the care of the land. It values local production and distribution systems, the use of local breeds and varieties, and the astronomical calendar to guide cultivation timings. The philosophy of biodynamics extends from the field into the wine cellar and beyond. All right, we've talked about biodynamics. We interviewed a guy with biodynamic wines. I saw this headline. I'm thinking, okay, this guy's going to come out and make some statements about it because, hey, what a better way to do it if he has a chance to sit there and taste all three of them at the same time. Not the same vineyards, but at least probably the same type of grapes. Well, he disappointed me. So if he hears this, or if any of you knows him, you can tell him he disappointed me. He really didn't say too much. He described what biodynamic was. He described organic. And then he went on, he says, after tasting in the beautiful building, he was called to the side, and he tasted a number of truly splendid white wines, and he talked at length with organic and biodynamic growers about their principles and their wines, and could not fail to be impressed by their passion. But he didn't say too much. An opportunity here. He had an opportunity to make a major statement about the biodynamics, the major statement about the organic as opposed to the others. And good, bad, or indifferent, a statement would have been appreciated. He didn't either. So I am a little bit disappointed in this article. If you want to see the article, it is available. Let's see. What's his blog site? I'll find it here on the thing. see it. Maybe I won't. Laura Valley Wine Tour dot WordPress.com. Laura Valley Wine Tour. Just try that as the search engine. And LOIREVALLEYWINETOUR, Laura Valley Wine Tour. And see if you can find it on that. That'll get you to him. And then you can look for organic is good, biodynamic is better, and read the article there. But again, I was quite disappointed. I thought someone was actually going to come out and give us some insight. And that's all I was asking for, some insight. And never had the opportunity to do that. Let's see, here's something else that I wanted to talk about also. I can actually say this for a different time. This is different types of wines. It's a neat little chart. It shows a bottle of wine and has branches of it for fortified wine, and it goes off onto that, and sparkling wines, and it goes white sparkling wines, and it goes to semi-sweet floral, and then tells you someone to look for on that. A neat little chart. I'll talk about this chart at some other time. It is a really cool chart, and I have it. If anyone wants it, ask me for the wine bottle chart. I'll be happy to send that to you. But a cool chart, really quite a cool chart. Here's something else. French wine consumption has hit a record low. The French wine consumption has sunk to a record low, with the average adult now consuming in France barely a glass a day. A major consumption found. That's why the United States is catching up. The United States is catching up with the world in wine, especially France. It says the study appears to confirm France's gradual shift away from being a nation of heroic wine drinkers to one that is increasingly turning to fizzy drinks and fruit juices at mealtimes. Oh, the shame. That was my editorializing there, by the way, the articles. France's average wine consumption has fallen from a massive 160 liters per adult per year in 1965 to only 57 liters per adult in 2010. Roughly the equivalent of a drop from 3 glasses per person to 1 glass per person per day. The public awareness campaigns over the binge drinking coupled with the sluggish economy is cited for the reasons. Fewer than 1 in 5 adults are now drinking wine almost every day, according to the study. The survey was published this week. It was found that the number of people who drink wine on a daily basis has fallen to 17% in 2010, down from 21% just 5 years earlier. The same period, the number of occasional drinkers, those who enjoy once or twice a week, rose from 41 to 45%, and the teetotalers were stable at 38%. The French have cut back on their wine consumption. They're starting to do more fruity, they're starting to do more fizzy, they're starting to do everything but the wine. So, interesting. The French are not drinking as much wine. That's almost sad.
Yeah. I wonder if that's going to, will that eventually reach us and, you know, it's just like going to be a worldwide trend? I don't know.
I don't think so. I can't do that. We're increasing our wine consumption.
Yeah.
You know, it's every year we rise higher and higher in our wine consumption. So I don't. Let's see. Something else. Where is it? I wanted to point out to you all here. Oh, I talked about that. And talked about that. Oh, that's done. And, oh, here. This is a little quick thing I want to go through here. The top 10 wine festivals around the world. These are celebrations of the grape. All right. The top 10 around the world, according to this one particular thing, this is out of business, the drinks business, and it covers all sorts of wine, spirits, beer, champagnes, fine wine products, U.S., France, United Kingdom, Asia, jobs, news, all sorts of stuff. The drinks business. It's a trade journal. But Let me read you nine top festivals. First one, in Spain, they have a big celebration, a visually stunning parade of brightly colored effigies of the phylloxera bugs. Remember, phylloxera destroyed the grapevines in the United States, and when we planted them in France and all around the world, and we've talked to people in this country, all say that they helped, save French and all that. So, but they in Spain they do a parade every year with effigies of the phylloxera bug, and they take to the streets of the city of Sardinia in Catalonia. It's illuminated by firecrackers. The festival goes through the town. Celebrates the historic victory over the phylloxera invasion of the 19th century. It takes place on September the 7th and 8th this year. So you can set your calendars for that. Pretty cool, actually. Shula Fest in Nashik, India. This is set in the vineyards of India's main wine-growing region called Nashik. The Shula Fest blends music, food, and wine to bring a big crowd of wine lovers from nearby Mumbai as India continues to embrace wine culture. This year, it took place last on the 2nd, 3rd, so we just missed that one. The weekend of 2nd, 3rd. Oh, speaking of India and that part of the world, the Ganges River. The Ganges River over there is sacred, and people gather there for a chance to bathe in the Ganges or to immerse themselves in the Ganges to be blessed, to cleanse themselves and to be blessed. This year, and I think it might be over now, but it might be continuing on right now through this week. It was last week. Excuse me. This has nothing to do with wine, but this is just interesting. Last week, people gathered from around the world to Hindus and Buddhists and Hindus and all these at the Ganges River. They said that enough people gathered there, because this was a special occasion, more so than others, the equivalent number of people that had gathered there for this ceremony was equal to the entire populations of the cities of New York, London, and Paris combined. That's how many people were there at the Ganges gathering up for this celebration this last week.
Wow.
I mean, wow.
Yeah.
They had tents set up. They had all sorts of stuff. Wow. But, okay. Just thought of that. I want to, pass that on. I don't know if anybody else heard about that or not, but that was just amazing. Vienna Wine Hike. Vienna is unique as a capital city, but it has over 700 hectares of vineyards within the city limits. And for one week in the spring, April 19th to the 21st, you can walk to the vineyards, which are normally closed, sample wines, and taste wines in the taverns and all that. So Vienna Wine Hike, that sounds really cool, coming up April 19th to the 21st this year. So if you want to go to Vienna and check that out, it is available. Saint-Emilion, Band de Vendange. Saint-Emilion has a parade August the 31st this year, and the parade takes to the streets as part of the festival that prepares the town for the coming harvest. There are plenty of opportunities to take part in the architectural charms of the town and sample the new vintage that is coming up in the Saint-Emilion region of France every year. Sowito Wine Festival. This is obviously in Africa, bringing wine and wine culture to the people of Sowito. The festival is now in the 8th year with the aim of spreading the word about South African wine to the 80% of the population that traditionally had little contact with it. The festival has attracted more than 8,000 visitors last year, and it runs this year from September the 6th through the 8th. So South African wines, always good. They have a good variety there. And I'm going to destroy some French names here. I know I am. Planted in 1932, the small urban vineyard in the heart of Montmartre in Paris sits next to the Le Pan Agile Cabaret Bar and celebrates its vintage in early October each year with special theme and lots of French celebrities. The Gamay and Pinot Noir grapes are vinified in the Town Hall of Paris's 18th arrondissement, whatever that means, and the wine is sold at auction with all proceeds going to help local charities. So there's this little vineyard right smack dab in the heart of Paris, and they celebrate and have a big thing every year because of it. And all the money goes to charity, which is cool. We have a celebration to honor the wines of the Chianti. It takes place in the town of Montespertoli at the end of May, with a wine-themed parade, music, and lots of Chianti. And then we have Bordeaux Fête de la Vigne. At the end of June, the city of Bordeaux turns itself over to a big wine festival on the banks of the Garonne, where for centuries the Bordeaux wines were consigned to ships and exported around the world. You can buy a tasting pass and enjoy the wines from all over the region. That is in June. And then the last big festival in this world that you might want to go see is the Hero Wine Battle. Spain again goes to extremes with the wine festivals in the town of Hero in La Rioja on June 29th, the Saints' Day of San Pedro. Town folks and visitors, all dressed in white, carry every conceivable receptacle filled with wine and proceed to drench each other from head to toe, turning everyone purple. So you get drenched
purple. Okay. Interesting.
That would be fun, though, you know, to do it once and say you did it, you know.
Right. Okay.
And one last quick thing here, and we will be done. I think I talked about this. Sweet wine sales are up. Yes, I did talk about this. The sweet wine sales, I talked about this last week. Sweet wine sales are up tremendously. United States became the largest still light wine market in the world, surpassing Italy in 2011, according to IWSR, which I have no idea what IWSR, International Wine Society report, I guess. A leading provider of data on wine, spirits, and the markets around the world. Wine sales in the United States reached 300.6 million cases, an increase of 4.2% over the prior year. The big trend was in Moscato and Sweet Red, which were domestic wine, grew by just over 5%, imports by nearly 2%. As the trend continuing, consumers' taste may change, but growth is expected to climb, and the IWSR forecasts that the market will reach 322 million cases by 2015. So, the United States became the
light
in the world, surpassing Italy. Yay!
Yeah.
That means that they can listen to the program. Tell your friends we're on the air. They can learn more about wine. And that's it for tonight's stuff. I'm glad I had a chance to share a lot of this stuff with everyone because I have been wanting to, but we've had guests and stuff. Hopefully next week we'll have another guest. You won't have to listen to me again.
I try to plan for things like this, but you have a full page, almost going into a page and a half here that I've been jotting down things. That's a lot of information for you. I mean, one person right there, our resident wine expert, vice president and general manager of Florida State's Winery. That's right, Ron. Oh, are you kidding me? Just a clap? It's not that cold out there yet, is it?
We need to get. Yeah. There we go. Close the window. Yeah, fantastic. That's a lot. That's a wow. That's a lot to cover. Definitely. Very informative. Tonight's show. I mean, just what, hour and 20 minutes going, and some of.
Interesting information.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
I was looking up that Red Mountain. It's I found a Red Mountain Estate vineyards and winery in Myanmar.
Yep.
They have a really nice website. They have a contact page. I might shoot them a message and see if they would like to Skype us. And I don't know what time it is over there. It's probably, well, it's kind of like the same time range that Australia was in, but I guess a little later, earlier. No, later in the day. Yeah, something like that. Earlier in the day.
Later.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. So later. But very nice. Red Mountain -estate.com. That's their website. They got a neat. They got pictures and everything. So very interesting. Speaking of events, you have a wine class this weekend on February the 17th. That
Every
is
time.
A one.
Full.
That's what.
We are.
You're full.
Oh, we're full. We can't squeeze any more people in.
So if you're not on that one, then try again next time. I won't go any further.
March.
It's basically it's a 3-hour class, fantastic class, and you know, if you do have a group or something, this one is full. But contact Florida State's Winery and tell them you want to get into a class, and they'll fill you in on everything. Another great way to stay in touch and to find out when these are coming up is to subscribe to the newsletter. Go to FloridaEstatesWines.com. It's all one word: FloridaEstatesWines.com. And subscribe to the newsletter from the website. That's your another best bet there. But so this weekend it is full. That's a good sign. But all kinds of information about wine, everything you want to know is there. It's what?
We usually cut it off 30 and our 25, 27. We hit 30 and we just said, that's it. We can't do anymore. Red Mountain, what is it? I'm going to pull this up.
Oh. Yes, it is redmountain-estate.com. It is A Wine of Myanmar is their website. Let's see, what else? I did have a couple of questions. We'll have to cover them on the next show. We're kind of running, you know, we've got about 7 minutes or so for tonight. But I did come up with a couple of questions. I also figured out that Prohibition was where air quotes came from when the people went to distribute the alcohol to the you know, bars, speakeasies, or what you want to call them, and they would say stuff like, "Your milk is here," using air quotes. I think that's where that came from.
Cool.
I just made that up.
Did you?
Check it out. It's probably in history somewhere. The
it
history of
is.
Air quotes. Yeah, yeah. Your lemons. Your lemon juice, your orange juice is here, quote, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, I think that's where it came from. People use it still today, so
that's
in
right,
case you're wondering, the unofficial history of where air quotes came from.
Air quotes.
Also,
put that on what is the encyclopedia? Oh, I got a blank now. Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. We can make an official page for that. That'd be awesome. Urban Dictionary. Where did air quotes come from? There's an Urban Dictionary. It tells you where all these things came from, and I'm thinking, wow, that's interesting.
Really?
But and it, all the slang terms, everything you can think of is in this Urban Dictionary, and it's how it
that's
came about. Different
dictionary.
I think that's the. I have an app or something for that, but it covers some crazy stuff.
Weird.
There was a question I was gonna maybe we can bring it up for next time, but you know, we talked about restricted states, like you were just talking about Montana. You can't ship into Montana, and there's states that can't ship out. I think South Dakota was one of them, but one of the wineries we talked to is not having a problem shipping. But you can't ship the wine. But what about shipping the actual grapes? Do people do that? Does that?
Yeah, it's not fermented. It's not fermented. It's the alcohol.
Yeah, so that's
so
all they're concerned with.
Grapes
so
in and out, yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot. Remember, we were talking to So South Dakota, there are a couple of wineries, and they said that they get grapes in from California.
Oh, from all of it. That's right. Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah,
there you go. Yes. And then the other thing is to operate a winery where you're actually selling, you know, over the counter or whatever, you have to follow certain guidelines, regulations. I guess those are put out by the FDA or other.
Actually, the TTB, Tobacco and Trade Bureau, and it's the wine, it's the alcohol, tobacco, and alcohol and tobacco, and trade bureau. It's ATTB, and that is they control alcohol, they control tobacco. In fact, Kathy was in work today, and a representative from the TTB came in and walked around, just did a site inspection, be sure we had the license and everything posted properly and all that stuff. He just looked around at stuff and thanked her and left. So we do get inspected periodically.
If you're running a vineyard only, then do you still fall under them because your product is used to, you know, in the wine process at some point, or do you fall under more of an agriculture type of restriction, or is there no restriction? I mean, could you start one in your backyard? There's my vineyard, and nobody checks anything on of that, or
it becomes a farm winery. You can't spray there's agricultural rules that you can't spray and you can't use pesticides on it so much before harvest and things like that. And that goes with almost any agricultural product. You are restricted in such a period before the actual harvest, because it could carry residuals into the products and stuff like that, or on the product. And same thing with grapes. You're restricted in when you can spray. So, yeah, you become an agricultural entity, and you have to – there's license and stuff for that too, and you got to get, you know, license and everything for that.
Okay. But only for commercial use. If you want to grow grapes in your backyard for that particular purpose, you have your own setup, and it's only for your own consumption, then you still have to do that, or no?
No, there's no restrictions on that. You are restricted in the number you can make for yourself, but there's no restrictions.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
No.
Interesting. Okay. Well, then I don't have to save that for – let me scratch this page out.
This website is really pretty cool. This
Red Mountain.
Red Mountain Estate Vineyard is really – it's a nice website.
Yeah. I was looking at the contact page. I'm thinking, because we had Australia on, we can pretty much put anybody worldwide on the show. So
yeah, that would be really cool to get somebody on from there.
Absolutely. Don't forget, if you're going to a spring training baseball game between now and, before April, I would say, because the regular season starts in April.
Yeah, April 1st, it expires.
Yep. Save that ticket stub and bring it into Florida State's winery. You get a free tasting and also 10% off of any wine purchase. That's a fantastic offer, and you'll enjoy a baseball game and enjoy some world-class wines at Florida State's winery. Mention you heard about it, this deal on the Blog Talk Radio show All About Wine, and hopefully they'll give you a good look and go, oh, okay, cool.
That is cool. Yeah, it's always we've had people come in who follow us, and that's always cool to have people come and see. We follow you, and I go, oh, cool. Yeah.
And you go, in which way are you following? Because also, I added a thing to our Twitter feed, so when I want to post stuff on Twitter and Facebook at the same time, it can happen, so that's not a problem anymore. So you'll get updates on Facebook as well when I'm posting stuff on Twitter, because I do that during the show sometimes, so check that out. So basically, go to the Facebook page at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr, and you'll also see some of the Twitter feeds as well. So do that. Or visit the website, allaboutwinebtr.com. There you go.
You can do that. That links you to everything. Yes.
Yeah, and we only have less than
a minute.
So it might go into overtime, I think.
No, does it? No. If it doesn't, everybody's going to leave us. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you next Thursday, February 21st at 7 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Ron, as always, for great show, great everything you do there. And unless we go into overtime, I'll go ahead and play the outro anyway for those people who are still with us.
And thank you all for listening.
Yeah, it hasn't gone on yet. It still says on. There we go. Recording. So we're in overtime.
We are in overtime. Okay.
Yes. So thank you all again for listening. And on the archives, we appreciate it. And tune in each week here on Blog Talk Radio. It's all about wine. And we'll see you on the February 21st. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you all.
Thanks. All right. Yeah. Well, here we go.
Everyone dance.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.